Oliver Nelson on alto and tenor sax, Eric Dolphy on alto sax and bass clarinet, Richard Wyans on piano, George Duvivier on bass, and Roy Haynes on drums, an extraordinary group, with Nelson's composition 6 and 4. It's a title track from his 1961 album. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and return our attention to a very familiar subject here, the Clinton Foundation. The Clinton Foundation yesterday ostensibly met a hard November the 15th IRS deadline for current fiscal reports on its operations, as well as key information and missing documents from old reports. But the information submitted yesterday raises brand new questions about whether the foundation fully or truthfully accounted for its complex operations. The IRS had given the foundation an extended deadline in August when the foundation said it could not compile all that was asked for by that time. A new date was set, and complete records for the foundation and all of its affiliated projects were to be submitted by November the 15th, yesterday, and there were to be no additional extensions. Charles Ortel, as you know, has been our guide here on matters concerning the Clinton Foundation. He is a retired Wall Street banker turned self-styled financial investigator and has been tracking the Clinton Foundation and its affiliated spin-offs for well over 2 years. He blew the lid off Wall Street crime during the 2008-2009 crash when he proved that several major corporations were in fact overvaluing their stock. This self-initiated probe of his into the Clinton Foundation has led him to conclude that a cleverly designed slush fund was what the foundation was for the Clintons, and he has called it the largest unprosecuted fraud, charity fraud, mind you, in U.S. history. So he's with us once more to present his initial analysis of the documents the foundation submitted to the IRS yesterday. And Charles, thanks for being with us. Yeah, I know you got no sleep last night.
Well, thanks very much for having me back on, Eutrice. It's my great pleasure.
Well, you've had a chance to take a glance, and with your trained eye, a glance is a lot more than it would mean if I were to say I took a glance at things. But what is your overall impression here of the documents that the Clinton Foundation submitted to the IRS in order to meet its November 15th deadline?
Well, what I've learned watching the Clintons now is they are the main Clintons, that is to say Bill and Hillary, to a lesser extent Chelsea. They are incapable of thinking about life other than through a political lens. So as they submitted these additional batch of what I would argue are fraudulent and materially misleading documents into the public domain, as they continue raising, soliciting money over the internet, maybe using the mails and otherwise, Hillary embarked on a campaign appearing, I think, in an interview for Mother Jones and then the various comedic late-night shows, making the case yesterday that any prosecution of her would be akin to turning the United States into a banana republic dictatorship because it would be a political witch hunt. And so she's trying to raise all kinds of noise. And, of course, there are lots of, you know, people, retreads, diehards, who still support the persistence, the ill-advised persistence of Hillary Clinton. That's the way I believe they tried to play it. They could not have, I've mentioned before that I have some back, and the one sport I played a fair amount of is tennis, and I learned in tennis you don't necessarily have to win each point. Your opponent can lose very frequently, and your opponent lose, then you win. So what they did here, you have to, when you operate a charity of the size, even really far smaller than this, but certainly the size of the Clinton Foundation, you can't just have management and the directors of the thing fill out your tax forms. You have to, when you fill out your tax forms, you have to find a qualified, independent accounting firm that has taken the care, done the due inquiry required to cross-check, to stress-test all of the key numbers and assumptions, and ensure that whatever financial statements and financial filings are provided to the IRS and then to the various state government authorities and foreign government authorities, that firm has to make sure that it has done its job in accordance with strict requirements, which are called AICPA guidelines. And what they did here is they had been working for many years with an embarrassment, which was the Little Rock office of a firm called BKD, Boy King David, initials BKD. They worked with that firm, even though that firm agreed for years to employ, with management's call, to employ accounting guidelines, which are manifestly not allowed in the United States. So, you know, a responsible grown-up, and supposedly Terry McAuliffe, who's the sitting governor of Virginia, he was an outside director of the Clinton Foundation for many years, supposedly has training in business. If he doesn't understand that that firm was, it was grossly negligent in what they were doing, then he's even dumber than I thought he is, and I don't particularly think he's that stupid. So they used that firm, and then they replaced that firm with a much bigger firm, Pricewaterhouse, now called PwC, and they used that firm to cover the year 2013, 14, and 15. You'll recall that in 2015, I just got started on it, but I called for the Clinton Foundation then to amend their previously filed financial statements, and they initially didn't respond directly to me, but they responded to other press reporters, and they said there's no need to do that, no need whatsoever, we're not going to do it, no way. And then on the 16th of November 2015, the then president of the Clinton Foundation issued a letter to her supporters, supported by a fact sheet, which said that an outside law firm, DLA Piper, which I would argue is not an independent law firm, had hired an accounting firm, Cohn Reznick, C-O-H-N-R-E-Z-N-I-C-K, to conclude an internal review of all past filings, and according to text in that press release that was issued on November 16, 2015, I don't have it in front of me, but to summarize it, said that accounting firm concluded, and we, DLA Piper, in our capacity as experienced people, concluded there was no need to refile any tax returns, which is rubbish. That is a completely incorrect set of conclusions. But nonetheless, in an abundance of caution, they were going to refile. So they amended certain previous tax returns. They did not, as I would argue is required, amend the audits, which were all false and materially misleading. And then off they went again. Last year, we were on air around the time this happened, the Clinton Foundation again refiled. They didn't amend, but they filed tax returns, including an audit from PwC. Well, lo and behold, the firm that was procured to file this audit last night, is Cohn Reznick. And without getting too much into the weeds on the phone, because it's more helpful to do this with a video format, and I will be doing that, shameless plug, on Sunday at 3 p.m. on Sunday with Charles on the YouTube channel with Crowdsource the Truth. I will be taking people through slides and tables and facts showing and proving that this, in theory, audit that was produced by Cohn Reznick is garbage. It's not even close to being compliant with the law, and they filed it. They filed it with the IRS on the final deadline. They decided they'd just break the law again, and they're in the process as we speak now. I checked this morning. It is not yet on file in the New York website. Doesn't mean it wasn't filed. Sometimes they take time to get these things up and running. But in New York State, they put a date stamp on when they receive it. And in New York, you had to get it in by November 15th as well. So I don't see that as yet being filed. But in multiple states, this false and materially misleading set of numbers has just been filed yet again, purporting to deal truthfully with what happened or what happened in 2016. And, you know, just a quick summary of the things that are wrong. When you audits, we don't mean here, you know, the kind of audit that you don't want to get from your tax authority. We mean that, you know, the Clinton Foundation people get together, they do their best effort to try to put together a complete set of books and records. It gives you an income statement, a balance sheet, a cash flow statement, footnotes, wider explanation of what really happened. And you then, once they do that work, you then get a truly independent firm. It should have no conflicts, no material conflicts, gets together and checks that work and often pushes management and says, actually, you need to do it this way, not the way you did it, et cetera. A long negotiation typically ensues, and you get this supposed audit. With the auditor understanding that the auditor has real liability. Now, when you follow, and I joke, I'm honestly joking, when you follow Ortel's first and only law, and you take anything connected to the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation or the Clinton Foundation, and you punch that thing into Google with the word fraud, you will always be amused. So when you punch Cohn Resnick in with the word fraud, you discover it has been associated with multiple frauds. Its predecessor firm, J.H. Cohn, C-O-H-N, multiple frauds. So, you know, what would a large criminal enterprise engaged globally or in many countries soliciting donations on the basis of false and materially misleading information? If you can't use the firm, PwC, that screwed up the Academy Awards last year, earlier this year, you turn to Cohn Resnick. And so, you know, this is a very, you know, bad decision. Whoever made this decision, you know, does not understand the very strict legal liabilities that can attach to a bunch of fraudsters who engage in widespread pattern and practice of criminally soliciting donations while false and materially misleading documents remain circulating in the public domain. If they do this related to disaster relief as they have done it, if they do this using wires, using the Postal Service, using telephones, there are multiple criminal serious crimes that I think are being broken here yet again by a group of people who, you know, cannot say that they slipped on a banana peel for the first time. This has been in the public domain. It is rumored, and actually it's not just rumored. The IRS has admitted that they have been investigating this Clinton Foundation since, I think, June, July timeframe, 2016. There are multiple reports of U.S. government, the appropriate U.S. government, federal and possibly state governments looking at this. There are multiple foreign governments that should be looking at this. And so to make a decision to do what they did was really stupid. And what will shortly, I think, come to the fore is that this conspiracy cannot move forward any longer. There are rumors already that people inside the Clinton Foundation or around the Clinton Foundation have been talking to authorities. If this goes hurtling in the direction where I think it is headed, it will very quickly, if it hasn't already become, in the interest of people who understand what really has been going on here and have been just part of this conspiracy, swept into it, thinking there's no lifeboat for them. There's not room in the lifeboat for 100 people. But there probably is room in any lifeboat, more leniency, for a handful of people. And those people better start coming forward.
Well, okay. Technically, they have met the deadline, the extended deadline. How long before we get an inkling? I mean, you've been perusing what has been submitted already, but how long before we know from the IRS itself that the documents either meet or do not meet the requirements that they set out?
Well, it'll take, and you know, it'll take even me, and I'm modestly familiar with this mess here, it'll take me several days to go through and decide what do I believe are the most important discrepancies and the next most important, et cetera, et cetera. So I imagine it will take the IRS because they have far more to do. I've got nothing else to do, and they've got a lot of other things to do. So, you know, it may take them a little while to get things moving. But what is also happening as we speak is, you know, it's very different here, November 16th, 2017, to what it was like in 2015. And back in 2015, Hillary Clinton was the odds-on favorite to be the next president of the United States. And a lot of people had a lot of money in certain cases, invested interests, hoping that she would, in fact, be the president of the United States. And therefore, a lot of people were unwilling to open the boxes that now have to be opened and are being opened, considering how bad this criminal fraud enterprise has been and for how many decades has it been operating. And I think the penny has dropped. If I may say, Therese, I think one of the things that's happening here that is really independent of my work, though I do know Kathleen Willey quite well and I admire her and respect her, one of the things that's happening, unfortunately for the Clintons, is that at the very same time that this charity fraud scandal is beginning to catch fire and catch the attention of the government authorities, what happened with Harvey Weinstein in Hollywood, what's happening now with these accusations against the candidate in Alabama for the Senate, is that, you know, many, many more people are coming forward and saying, you know, these politicians grope me and these people rape me and these people attack me. And we're starting to see in the last 48 hours articles in the press that may well be planted by anti-Clinton Democrats, actually, coming from the left. Chelsea Handler, I don't think you can call her a conservative Republican Tea Party operative. You know, she's now apparently apologizing to Juanita Broderick, and The Atlantic has a story saying it's time to have a reckoning in Bill Clinton's behavior. And more people are looking at this and saying, you know what? The Clintons have had their day in the sun, and there's just too much here. It's not simply the Uranium One scandal. It's not simply, you know, what happened with all, you know, his meddling and messing when he was president of the United States. On top of all that, it appears now these people are running and continue to run and are unrepentant and make no apologies for running what I really do believe, and the more I see this, is the largest, not simply unprosecuted charity fraud. It's the largest unprosecuted fraud in history. It's bigger than Madoff by far. And, you know, I think people are sick and tired of this across the political spectrum. I know they are. You know, I don't confine myself to or even look at myself in political terms, but I've thanks to you, Therese, I've had a great opportunity to speak with you and your listeners. I speak with, you know, conservative listeners, neutral listeners, foreign listeners, domestic listeners. People are, you know, the one area in America where I think there's broad agreement is that we do not countenance charity fraud. We do not countenance going around the world when there is a disaster, as there was in Haiti and in India and elsewhere, and asserting that, you know, people like the Clintons and their foundation are going to help make the lives better of people who've been devastated by a natural disaster, when instead it appears what they do is they divert the money for who knows what purpose. So I think across this country, around the world, people are sick of this. I think in the Democratic Party, people are beginning to understand that there is, in fact, an open playing field now, that, you know, the generation that used to say when they were 20, don't trust anybody over 30, now they're in the 70s. They're trying to cling on to power in the Democratic Party, and I think people in that party are saying, enough of this. And, you know, we've passed, I hope, a tipping point here. So I think this could move very quickly. It's the problem for the Clintons with this mess is they have now met, in theory, the final deadline with an F exam. The teachers, you know, people, this isn't like a gray area. You know, the basic math of the filings that I've seen doesn't work. It doesn't foot. It doesn't agree. They've submitted contradictory, false, and obviously materially misleading documents that are not in conformity with required accounting standards. And if I can see that in less than 24 hours, I'm quite sure that the toughest forensic auditors in the FBI, even the FBI and the IRS, the line people, can see it immediately. And that's before the various state authorities look at this mess. and look at whatever addition.
But you're talking in a way that negates another reality, and that is, with all of the all of these inconsistencies that have existed for so many years, the foundation nonetheless has managed to escape this kind of scrutiny, and has managed also to escape any criminal liability, because it has been very good at planting people in different places that will and have protected them, which is why the foundation has not come into serious accounting or jeopardy, legal jeopardy, for all these years. What makes you think it's going to change now?
Well, you know, what does take time, you know, people are fond of saying that it's tough, you know, the analogy would be it's tough to have a super tanker move suddenly off a course that's been set for a long time. So certainly the United States federal government and then the various people inside the state governments are, you know, a flotilla of super tankers. And until this most recent, I think it was either a week ago Friday or last Friday or Sunday, the head of the IRS, John Koskinen, was a holdover from the Obama period. And who knows how many holdovers there are sitting inside the IRS, not simply from the Obama years, but from the George W. Bush years, and then from the Bill Clinton years. How many of those people are stuck inside the IRS, the Justice Department, et cetera, supposedly in apolitical career positions, but in reality in a position to blunt an inquiry? There are a lot of those people. And, you know, I would argue that this mess, the Clintons and whoever around this mess, have been very adept at, you know, using whatever information they have and tainting whoever they need to taint and turning what is a Clinton wing of the Democratic problem into a Democratic Party problem and, you know, establishment wing of the Republican Party, so that they had this immunity, this you know, cloak of immunity, where they could, you know, perpetuate whatever misdeeds they were perpetrating. They could also turn off prosecutions. And they had so much dirt and so many people that, you know, they were able to let this thing progress until Donald Trump happened and until Donald Trump showed some resiliency. Now, there's still, you know, opposition, I gather, today or yesterday, five members of the Democratic Party introduced bills of impeachment, and Hillary and her allies are around trying to spread, you know, their standard gaslighting approach, accusing Trump of behavior which the Clintons, in fact, have carried out for a long period of time, and arguably Obama carried out, you know, abusing the power of the state against political enemies. So, you know, there still is fight left in the Clintons. But for the first time since January 20th, 1993, there is a federal government that is under the control of forces that would like to see this kind of fraud and abuse in the vast slug of the economy that's $5 trillion in it, in charity land, where there's so many good people doing good things, but where, unfortunately, examples like the Clinton Foundation, and I would argue big donors to the Clinton Foundation that have got a lot of explaining to do about why smart people at the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, other of these well-founded foundations and universities, why have they given money to an obvious fraud for so long? Why have they done this? So, you know, sometimes the tectonic plates in the earth move suddenly, and I think that's what's happened here. It's taken 2.5 years or more, but the plates have shifted inside this country. And then outside this country, you know, there are a lot of foreign governments that have a lot of explaining to do as to why they gave so much money to this charity. And they have been educated now. They've been looking at this for a while. They will have, in their own time, with their own experts, they'll take a look and see this filing. They'll see it for what it is, yet another crude attempt to, you know, distract with obvious mathematical errors. I mean, it's just, there's obvious discordant discrepancies that cannot be reconciled, that clearly are wrong, and there's a failure to correct the record, the required corrections that should have happened from October 23, 1997, right the way to the present. They decided not to make them. because they didn't correct that, then none of this work is actually right. And people are going to see this, finally. On top of which, you know, the performance that they put forward for the most recent year is horrible.
Which brings me to the question about whether the role of the IRS in all of this will also require the IRS to hunt down all these hundreds of millions of dollars. And in fact, we've talked about the possibility that this is well into the billions of dollars that came in, but nobody knows how it went out and where it might be. Who does that kind of investigation besides the Department of Justice and perhaps the FBI? But we've seen even in those two departments, those two agencies, some really crazy things going on with respect to unearthing the truth about the Clinton Foundation. So who is going to be charged with finding out that essential question, the answer to that question, where did the money go? We saw it come in. It was only partially accounted for. But, for example, in Haiti, people are still asking about where did $6 to $10 billion go?
Well, I think the answer is we the people, you know, people who listen to your show, citizen journalists, in league with lawyers who will be able to bring class action lawsuits against some of these donors, actual donors who've been harmed, will be able to pull on the many strings that are out there. I mean, the way the law works in the United States, I'm told by experts, is that when a private foundation, we'll pick on the Gates Foundation because they've been at this supporting the Clinton Foundation and its affiliates since 2001, you know, when a private foundation falsely characterizes a gift to a charity as being a gift to a public charity when it is not, in fact, a public charity, the Clinton Foundation is not a validly organized and operated public charity as far as I can tell and as my experts can tell. It certainly is not. It's given control of this operation to the Clinton family, which you cannot do and claim that you're a public charity. So when you make, as the Gates Foundation, repeated false declarations, even though they make throw lots of money around, it's incumbent on the Gates Foundation to make sure that every time they make a gift, they characterize it as being a gift to a public charity, that they are, in fact, making a gift to a public charity. And if they fail to do that, you know, when they discover that they've given money to a fake charity, they are required under the law to try to get that money back. And if they don't try to get the money back, then the IRS can put pressure on the Gates Foundation and any of the many other private foundations that have falsely characterized their donations as having been sent to a public charity when the Clinton Foundation is not a validly organized and operated public charity, in my view. So there's enormous pressure that way. Once, it's like anything else. I think Ernest Hemingway said, or a story he wrote, I think it was Old Man and the Sea, how do you go bankrupt? And the answer is slowly, then suddenly. Similarly, with a mess like this, you know, how do the problems mount? How does the crisis, you know, come to the fore? Slowly and then very suddenly. The second the IRS realizes that there is public interest in this, which I think there is now, overwhelming interest, and as the questions mount, it will become increasingly more difficult for the IRS to resist the reality that it must retroactively revoke the charter of the Clinton Foundation to operate. When that happens, a lot of donors will be on the hook to the IRS and to state taxing authorities and maybe to foreign taxing authorities for lots and lots of money and penalties and interest and other things. And that's when the civil lawyers will start thinking about suing the trustees who have obviously not exercised the required duties of care, loyalty, and obedience to overseeing this mess. And so that's when it'll go from, you know, resistance and, you know, to arrogance to a point where one day one or more lawyers for one or more of the billionaires that sit on the as directors of the Clinton Foundation are going to go to those billionaires and say, listen, you know, there's a good way for you to reduce inequality in this world, and that's to continue to support this Clinton Foundation. Because if you continue to do that, you will be the major deep pocket at the end of all these lawsuits, and you will appear to be resolutely unrepentant here, and you clearly have not done enough thinking about this, and people who have, you know, made billions of dollars don't like to suddenly lose billions of dollars. So there's going to come a point, we may not be very far away from it at all, where the will for these Clintons to fight will be cut off by the money that stands behind the Clintons.
Let's review for one second the important piece of the puzzle here, and that is the designation, the 501c3 nonprofit designation given by the IRS to the Clinton Foundation on the premise that the Clinton Foundation was to be started as a nonprofit organization, but it was funding the presidential library of Bill Clinton. All right, so how did, based on the research that you've done, how did the Clintons craft a very interesting kind of backdoor into good old-fashioned capitalism using their nonprofit status and the claim and the purpose being that money was going to be solicited in order to fund the Clinton Foundation?
All right. Well, I think, you know, this is a story that will be told, you know, over many hours and probably articles and volumes. But I think the short version of the story is that Bill Clinton and the people around him who were prepared to debate seriously under in a potentially criminal matter the meaning of the word is. You know, this same group was quite willing to confuse the public with a theory and assert that this presidential foundation formed in Arkansas on the 23rd of October, 1997, that entity had the right to do whatever it wanted to do, which is absolutely, flatly not the truth. No charity is set up with the right to do whatever they want to do. You have to have, if you want to be federally tax exempt and then state tax exempt, you have to assert specific and limited purposes. And those are set forth in the controlling legal document, I'm told, and I believe, is the Articles of Incorporation. And in those, in the Articles of Incorporation for the parent Clinton Foundation, which was originally called the William J. Clinton Presidential Foundation, it is crystal clear that the foundation was established solely to be a presidential archive holding primarily the presidential records that were created during Bill Clinton's two terms of office and a related research facility to study those records in Little Rock. That was the purpose of this thing. They could undertake activities, which is the purposes are uppercase P, activities are lowercase A. Those activities were solely to further the authorized tax-exempt purposes. And they have been reading that language as if that, you know, anything they wanted to do around the world is something they could do because they had a hunting license in setting up this presidential operation. That's total rubbish. So they have with a compliant IRS, perhaps with a gamed IRS, Lois Lerner, who we all know about her and the controversy about her, she was inserted into the IRS in 2001 and sat there for a long time over the machinery that might have stopped all this, but she meekly sat there, and the then Clinton Foundation just created all these false front charities that have been created under false pretenses using, you know, applications which had to be true and complete, but instead omit material information or false and misleading. So they obtained under false pretenses the rights to create these various charities that we've talked about in the past. A long record here. This isn't just one traffic ticket. This is now 20-plus years. And so they're in a place where they've made a mockery, which may have been their intent, a mockery of the strict laws that people do follow. And there are multiple examples of this in a long record. This isn't, you know, and people have been studying this for a while. So instead of cleaning up their act, instead of being reasonable, and instead of showing some repentance and some humility, no, it's just brazen arrogance. They thought they'd tough their way through it. Most recent sign of that was this filing sometime yesterday. And now they're in a position, Etrice, where they have to, they haven't finished their filing. They have to file in many, many states. And every time they do that, particularly if they're sending these materials using the mail or using digital services or whatever, they're breaking the law every time they do that.
Now we have, as we've seen, an inclination by the Barack Obama Foundation to follow the same path.
It's really amazing. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, Barack Obama is many things, but he's not stupid. And he's got people around him. I know some of the people around him, and they are smart people. And maybe they thought that Hillary was going to win, and maybe they thought that with Hillary in power, they'd get away with anything they wanted to do. But surely they must understand by now that, you know, Hillary didn't win. And Trump is, you know, is a force to be reckoned with. He may have his flaws, but he's a hardworking force to be reckoned with. And, you know, the last thing I would want to be doing is emulating, you know, decades-long criminal practices in a way where you have to produce the evidence of the public domain. Most criminal enterprises don't issue annual reports about their activities. But a charity, a public charity that stands in the shoes of government, must make complete and truthful public filings on a regular basis and circulate them to the public and ensure that the public has access to them. That is the demerit of using a charity, a public charity, as a fraud machine, as an illegal cash machine. That, you know, once you get caught, there are records and they're not hard to find.
Well, I'll just open up the phone lines, at least let people know that they can call in and ask you a question about where we are right now. And where we are right now is that the Clinton Foundation has ostensibly met its November 15th IRS deadline to file fiscal reports on its operations for several years up to the present, and also to file documents and that were missing, documents and information that were missing from the old reports, and some reports that never were filed at all. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Charles, what do you think is the biggest smoking gun of the reports and documents and that were filed yesterday? What stands out as a particularly weak point for the Clinton Foundation?
Well, as we discussed in the past, there was a requirement in a document filed with our own government, with the National Archives, on the 18th of November 2004. The Clinton Foundation committed itself to not only being a 501c3, which is a tax-exempt entity, but to be a 509a1, which means it's a public charity. It's getting the bulk of its information, its donations from the public, and operating not in the interest of a family, the Clinton family, but the general public. And instead, we go back to the article that excited my interest originally in the Clinton Foundation. Was published in August of 2013. It was a New York Times piece by Amy Chozick and Nick Confessor, which is titled something like Unease at the Clinton Foundation Over Finances and something else. And That article prompted a furious response from Bill Clinton. I forget if it was in the Wall Street Journal or where. He penned some kind of rebuttal, ineffective rebuttal, in my mind. And there ensued a process where by the 2nd of November 2013, the Clinton Foundation, in theory, through the a change in their bylaws, which is not as powerful or controlling a document as the Articles of Incorporation, through a change in the bylaws, they concentrated power in the hands of Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton on November 2nd, 2013, by creating two-class structure of directors. Class A were the Clintons, and they controlled all the major decisions and also controlled operation of the foundation in between board meetings, and everybody else, who were basically just window dressing. So they made that change, but they didn't make complete disclosure of the significance of the change, that gutted, in my mind, the public charity status, violated the agreement with the National Archives, violated the agreement in the city with the long-term lease with the city of Little Rock, struck March 1st, 2002, and violated a bond agreement where they'd sold, the city of Little Rock had sold bonds in 1998. So there are all kinds of problems not explained properly to the public, which if a donor had known about these problems from the period November 2nd, 2013 forward, that donor credibly could assert they would never have made a donation, because you couldn't make a donation to this thing and claim a tax credit. Believe if you knew all these defects, your advisors would tell you, now look, there's a high likelihood that someday somebody's going to find out about it, and your exposure will be that the IRS will do what they should do now, and that is to retroactively revoke the charter. So we start at that general, that sounds kind of detail-oriented, but believe it or not, that's just general. The nuclear weapon is that in this same time frame, starting around November 2nd, 2013, the Clinton Foundation amped up its drive to create not just, you know, a fund to pay a year's worth of expenses, but what is called an endowment, a large additional amount of money that might sustain the Clinton Foundation into the future. They began raising money for an endowment, indeed secured money for the endowment, without, I would argue, fully explaining to the donors the defective path and the critical error that they had made on November 2nd, 2013, concentrating power into the Clinton family in a supposedly public charity. So they made a set of errors that they repeatedly fundraised using this fellow, Dennis Cheng, who had been deputy protocol chief at the Hillary State Department. And there are a lot of questions in my mind as to how he fundraised. How did he choose his targets? How did he acquire the contacts with those targets? Were contacts gleaned through Hillary's State Department service harvested to fund this endowment? And was this endowment really raised from people who cared about charity or for people who thought they were getting an inside track to President Hillary Clinton? So there's a lot of questions around the whole marketing process, not just for the foundation, but more importantly for the endowment. And then once the money came in, and here we'll break a little bit of news, once the money came in, there was, you know, it wasn't exactly clear how that money was invested. But it appears in the filing, and we're going to check this very carefully in the next several days, it appears that one of the sets of partnerships that it was invested in was something called Summit Rock, which is an investment fund complex that may have ties, undisclosed ties, to members of the Clinton family, or a member of the Clinton family, and or members of the extended family. And so when you raise an endowment, there are special rules. An endowment is, you know, that's serious stuff. You're raising money using, in some cases, the mail, maybe telephones, digital media, raising money likely across state lines. You must explain in the solicitation process the true status of your foundation and the true status of its purposes, and you must explain clearly any defects which might exist in your foundation. And they obviously haven't done that. So, and the penalties, people, you know, attorneys general take a very dim view ordinarily of charity fraud, but when you raise money for an endowment illegally, and when you may tap into that endowment possibly to fund a political campaign, That's major league, big league problems. And then we get to the third leg of this stool, which is the revelations in the last several weeks now, amplified, that Hillary may have and her people may have illegally harnessed money that should have been donated or should have been raised for the purpose of going to the Central Democratic National Committee. They may have been, you know, getting that money or access to that money or control over that money, control over the Democratic National Committee, prior to her being anointed as the presidential candidate in 2016, without disclosing flaws in that arrangement and flaws in the foundation fundraising arrangement to either side. So there's, you know, there's a big mess here, I think, that will take some time to get unraveled. But I think the Clinton machine was barreling down a path in 2013, really, but by 2015-16, they thought they would lock it up. They would, you know, it seems like they thought they might rig the primary and then not rig the election, but steamroll the election, and then all these problems would disappear, because for certain, had Hillary won, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Ma'at from New York, you're on the air with Charles Ortel.
Yes, peace and blessings to the family. This is my comment and concern. It's very well to know, and much of what the information you're putting on the table around the corruption and criminality of the Clinton Foundation is probably right on point. The problem that I find and the disconnect is that the idea that the Trump administration, and Trump in particular, as a pathological liar, I mean, someone who said three times, why haven't we used the nuclear weapons, and threatened at the UN in public to annihilate all of North Korea, and on and on. I used to think that Trump could put black folks, people of color, back 50 to 75 years. Now it's more like 100 years after I heard the question is the comment. When Eiffel tells us about federal judges being nominated that have sympathies and blog about the first KKK leader, and on, I just see a disconnect there, and I like Charles. And he's not alone either, because I went to a film, A Good American, with Ray McGovern and William Binney, and they also, with the Lyndon LaRouche folks there, they also seem that Trump has something good other than criminality and corruption. He's basically a grifter from some of our eyes, and I'll listen to his response
over the air. You're off point today. I'm sorry to say. You're off point. We have a little bit of time, and the whole idea was to get questions about what was presented today answered today. Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Greetings to you and the PRN audience. I was curious, sir, what do you think the odds are of the Clinton Foundation and everybody involved just getting away with all this stuff that they've done? At this point, what do you think? I mean, they've been getting away with it for years. In your opinion, what are the odds they would just continue to just get away with it? That's one question. Okay. And I had a second question, but this too may be a little bit off topic.
All right, why don't I answer the first question?
Let's answer the question that's on topic. Okay.
I'll answer the first question.
Because we're running out of time.
I think there's always a chance of nothing happening. I mean, we could have, God forbid, you know, some dread terrorist event or war or whatever that would distract from this. Absent that, I would say the chance of this net being swept under the rug is less than 5%. There are just too many people. This is not a Republican or a Democrat issue. This is an issue that I think unites America. I know it unites Americans. Nobody in America is in favor of charity fraud. Nobody's in favor of using, you know, the names of multiple presidents to solicit money, billions of dollars that should have gone to needy people in Haiti and Africa and Asia and elsewhere, that instead may have been most likely diverted. Nobody's in favor of that. our charity sector, our not-profit sector, is filled with millions of good-hearted men, women, and children who really understand that charity is not about enriching oneself. It is not about vanity. It is about truly helping the needy. And so you besmirch a charity in this way for this long around the world, before the eyes of the world, people need to go to jail. They need to be punished. And I would say that we have a case here. There is a congressperson named Corinne Brown who has been convicted and awaits sentencing. I believe the date set for her sentencing is on the 4th of December, imminently, for a far smaller set of charity frauds, less than $1 million. And she faces tens, if not longer, and she's 7 years old, I believe, but she faces many, many years in prison. So this isn't a case where, you know, people could say, well, it's not that serious, nobody gets punished. This is a case where somebody who was running for Congress in 2016, just when Hillary was running for president, was prosecuted in the middle of her campaign, was convicted on 18 counts, and faces sentencing on December 4th. So with that and with the magnitude of this fraud, the fact of its far-reaching nature around the world and across this country, you know, I just don't think that it's at all fair to let the Clintons walk, and so therefore I don't think they will.
Okay, sir.
All right, thank you. Michael from New Jersey, you're on the air with Charles Ortel.
Hi, Trace. It's a pleasure to talk with you and Charles. I'll be brief. My question is, who's ultimately going to bring to bear justice on this whole phenomena of the Clinton Foundation? Who, what agency, what, there's problems with the FBI, with Mueller, and there's problems with the DOJ, there's problems with the IRS in terms of their being unbiased in their way that they go about their business. So who of these agencies, what institution is going to bring justice to bear?
Well, I this is a great question. I think it starts with we the people. You know, enough people, when I began on this, some people thought I was completely lost my mind, you know, that I thought this was a big problem because nobody was saying anything about it. And I think that's very different. Now it's front and center in the public consciousness. People see this as a problem. And they don't see it as a Republican or Democratic problem. They see it as an embarrassment and a major league criminal conspiracy that needs attention. The IRS may not be doing it as swiftly as we like, but by their own account, they've been studying this since last summer, last July or so. The FBI has been studying it for a while, and you know, we hear now daily in the news that this member, a new member, or some other member of Congress wants to make an issue of it in the House, in the Senate. Then there is the question of the foreign governments. There are many foreign governments here that have been defrauded. Now, some may have done this willingly, but it's not as if we're around the world everyone's rolling in money. People need money. Some of these governments that gave money to the Clinton Foundation are poorer today than they were when they made the gift. Members of their public are clamoring for action. So I think, you know, if we can force people to study the facts, not the fiction, the facts of what happened here, then I think the tide of public opinion has already started to turn. And when people see this not as a partisan issue, you know, I did not vote in 2016. I'm not a political animal. I'm not interested in politics, and I'm not being coy. I just loathe people who would stand up, believe they could run this country and maybe the world, having operated the largest criminal conspiracy charity fraud ever attempted in human history. I think that, you know, we need to make an example of this so that this does not happen again, so that Barack Obama and his foundation don't go down this crooked path.
But Charles, where do you see the first charge
But I just want to interject here. We're really, really tight on time. So, okay. Michael, you want to make your question really short, and Charles,
yes,
your answer as well.
Where's the charge or the where's it coming from? To bring this justice, FBI, DOJ, IRS. The people can't bring a charge. They have to work through the mechanisms of institutions of government.
Grand juries need to be called, indictments need to be handed down, and prosecutions need to proceed to trial. And that can happen quickly, as we saw against Paul Manafort. It happened very quickly. So it's time for action.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. I thank you, Charles, for adding yet another chapter to this sordid tale. But in case you're looking around, you'd see there are very few people doing this kind of work. And very few media outlets telling the story with this much detail. So I thank you for assisting us on both counts in seeing this picture far more clearly than we would have if we were waiting and put ourselves at the mercy of established media. Thanks so much again for being with us today and for the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. And you could reach me at Lead Stories, LEID Stories, plural, at gmail.com. A pleasure being with you today. We'll see each other tomorrow. Free Your Mind Friday.